Hey, Project Zion podcast listeners, this is Blake Smith again, this time with part two of the Nice to Matcha episode, featuring the conversation between host Robin Linkhart and special guest Joey Williams. If you missed part one, you can find it at projectzionpodcast.org. That's one word, projectzionpodcast.org, or on any of your favorite podcast platforms. Now, without further ado, here's Robin and Joey.
What brought you into the place of going into full-time ministry with Community of Christ? And as you talk about that and share about a variety of roles in which you've served over the years as a sustained minister, I'm aware that you've also had employment with Community of Christ that did not require you to be an ordained minister. Of course, you always function out of that once you're ordained. So take us on the journey of what that was like. And I know there are a few other adventures of life that come in the midst of that.
Yeah, there are so many things that, you know, the story just goes round and round and round. So I come back from my year in France, being a nanny. As I told you, I was calling this family that lived in Brest, Thierry and Amelie Schmidt, and just, I would tell them all the time, I want to come back. I want to be back in Europe. And I wanted to continue, you know, my French studies. You know, there were so many things that I wanted to do, but really my mind was on how do I get back to Europe? And at the time, the church was, So my whole goal was, how can I get back to Europe? We had something called, I had just been called to the office of elder. And then, of course, the church has this elders event at the auditorium. And this is like really fresh, right? So I sign up for this because I'm like, well, if I'm going to be an elder, I better do this. And many people from French Polynesia came. In fact, my host mom, the lady that I stayed at her house, she came to be a part of that. Now, of course, they had translations, you know, services during that event, at the elders event, but she had forgotten her equipment. And this was the service where Grant McMurray was giving his Transformation 2000 speech. And so here I am listening to the president of the church kind of lay out a future plan of what could happen in Community of Christ. And I am like trying to take it all in. And at the same time, this lady keeps hitting me with her elbow going, what's he saying? What's he saying? Asking me to translate. And so I'm trying to translate this and I'm trying to listen to it and I'm trying to take it in because I'm pretty amazed. And I'm drawn into what this appealing and what this vision is for the future of what the church could be. If, and I love this word in scripture, I love this. This is probably my favorite word in ministry is if, because it's always if we say yes, if we will become a prophetic people, then we will, right? There's always this if. So it's a choice. And Grant McMurray laid out a pretty clear, concrete, tangible choice and said, we are looking for some people to consider 3 years of full-time church ministry. And I remember as I was trying to share those words in French with the lady next to me, something in my body was like, I can do that. You know, I didn't know if I wanted to spend my whole life working for the church, but I was certainly in a place where I had just come back from Europe. I wanted to get back to Europe. I had taken a job as an English as a second language teacher, and I was also setting up GED, So helping people around Kansas City, I set up 10 different GED programs that year in Kansas City. So I was enjoying that job, but I just couldn't wait to get back to Europe. And my brain was like, I could do this. I could work for the church, assuming that would mean probably being a youth minister or something like that, something else that I had a passion for. And so that was already in my mind. And then I started having conversations with the Apostle of Europe at the time, to who was asking me if I might be interested in being a youth minister in Europe. And I was interested. So I got excited. I let my job know that at the end of the summer I would be leaving because I was going to go off to Europe and work for Community of Christ. I was going to spend 3 years working for Community of Christ. And I remember I had done that. I had already kind of quit my job. I was still working at the job, but I had quit my job. And I got a call from that apostle who said, "Joey, that family that you love in Brest in France, we actually gave that job to Thierry, the man in that relationship." And I'm like, "Oh my gosh. What does that mean?" I had already said, "Hey, I'm not going to work anymore." I'd kind of given up doing that. I was ready to go to Europe, and it wasn't going to happen. So I was like, "What do I do with that?" Of course, there were many jobs being offered at the time. So I applied for a couple other youth ministry positions, and I ended up having some wonderful interviews in different places. I was really wanting to work in Omaha. That was the best interview I'd ever been a part of. There were like 12 people on the interview committee, and it was very compelling. But when I was offered a position in Independence, it was closer to my family and my friends and the relationships that I already had. I took one of the youth minister positions with Central Mission, and that was at the time when we actually were creating mission centers. So we were bringing together three different stakes to form the mission center in Independence area and beyond around Kansas City, Greater Kansas City. So yeah, that's how it started. So I become a youth minister in Independence for 5 years, which actually was perfect training, I think. It was an excellent space for me to grow and to really develop some of my ministry skills, and as well as just, adulting skills and life skills and professional skills, that then 5 years later, when a different apostle came back and said that youth ministry position is open again, would you be willing to serve? And I was like, "I'm ready. I'm ready." I still, 5 years later, had that desire to go and still be in Europe. And so I kind of jumped on that opportunity, which was weird because it was right after 9/11. A lot of things had changed. So I head out at the end of that year over to Europe, to where I would then work for 5 years as a youth minister in Europe. And that mainly was working in the Netherlands. I lived in the Netherlands and I worked in Germany and France. So all those places that I had visited kind of became my work area. Although the job sometimes would take me beyond that. So sometimes I'd get to go to Norway or Russia or different places where our field had an impact, and even do some events over in England when we had kind of an international gathering of European youth. So worked there in youth ministry for 5 years. And then the church offered people to, they actually asked people to quit. And so the church was kind of offering these like severance packages because we were downsizing. And I had just come to a place, I'd been a youth minister for 10 years, and I did not see myself there's very few steps of where you can go at the time, especially in ministry. There weren't a lot of job options of where to go with that. So I was like, I'm not going to become a mission center president right now. And I thought maybe it's time that I turn back to some of my other interests and see what I can do. And so I quit my job. I took the severance package and I returned to Independence. I came back to Independence and started living here. I got a job as a French professor. I first worked at a local community college, and then I spent 7 years at UMKC, that school I would never go to, where I got my master's in French, and I became a French professor there. So that got me into all sorts of wild things. My parents also had their 50th wedding anniversary when I came back, and we wanted to throw them a big party. And I wanted to do something fancy and something cool. And so I went and I studied all of these chocolatiers and tried to see with different ways that people were making chocolates. And my family, my sister, my brother, and my mom and dad, and everybody, and all my friends got involved. And we dipped chocolate. So we took, I came up with a list of anything I could think of, all the way to hot peppers and potato chips, Twizzlers, anything that could be dipped in chocolate, I dipped it in chocolate. And we created this huge table. It was about the size of like 2 8-foot tables that was just filled with chocolate fountains and different dipped chocolates. And from that, somebody came up to me and said, Joey, do you cater? Do you do this? And I go, no, my mom's always been a cake decorator. That's a way we've made money. But this is the first time I've really put something together. And he said, and this was a member of the church, and he goes, well, I want you to do my daughter's wedding. And I go, okay. And he's like, so, and he kind of gave me this almost unlimited, not unlimited, but it was much more money than I had ever heard of being offered for one of my mom's cakes and doing a wedding. And he's just, I want you to do the whole thing. I want you to do this exact candy spread of all this chocolate, but I also want you to do the meal. And I was like, I'm not a chef. I don't know what you're expecting from me, but that started me into, I started my own catering business because he was so generous in making that available. I got 5 events just from my parents' 50th wedding anniversary, different things that people wanted to hire me for to actually do their event. So, and some of those were high school graduations, weddings, and different events that people were holding for different things. So here I am I'm teaching French at the university. I've now started my own catering business. And this friend, Irvelyn, who I stayed at her house before I even knew her, she was living in Independence at the time, and we became really close friends. And the church had, at the last World Conference, had passed this resolution that everything now needed to be in French, English, and Spanish, which meant that they were expanding. They had to expand. They couldn't just have one French and Spanish interpreter and translator. They now were expanding that team to like 4 or 5 French and Spanish speakers. And so I applied also to work for the church in translations, and I got that position. I was basically a proofreader, which not only improved my French even more, but it was just the way all of those things came together. In some ways, I have to say that was the most satisfying time of my career, to feel like I was engaged with young adults and youth as I'm teaching French classes at the university. I am active in the church because I'm working for the church. I am working on my French skills because I have a job that puts me into French. The other part about that job is they could only offer me 60% of the job in French interpretation. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? I need a, you know, I need an actual like full-time job. And they said, well, for the other 40%, we're going to give you two options. We're going to let you decide what you want to do. And they said, you can either become the World Church Children's Minister, or you can work on the hymnal committee and be part of creating the next hymnal for Community of Christ. And I had just done 10 years of youth ministry. And so I was like, music. So there's my musical outlet, my French and language outlet, my working with young adults and youth outlet. And I'm able to be I love to be creative. And so I get to be creative in this catering business that I'm doing on the side. Now, it was incredibly crazy, and I should never have been trying to do three careers. But you know, there's something about being in your 30s that you've got the energy to do multiple things like that at a time and consume your time and energy with those types of things. So it was one of the most satisfying times of working for the church when I was actually involved in many other things while I was doing that. However, God is always calling. And so I've worked 7 years now for the church in French interpretation. The best part of that job missionally was being a bug on the wall. So here I am, Robin, in all of these meetings with you when you're a president of 70, and I'm one of the interpreters assigned to the presidents of 70 meetings. And I am just listening to what mission looks like for Community of Christ, listening to all of the presidents of 70 share. And I am literally taking in those words and reproducing those words. So I'm creating the vocabulary for mission in my own self and interpreting that out in another language, reproducing that. I think there's something about that that was shaping and forming me for the eventual roles that I would take. Another group that I got to be a part of was for the Council of 12. And I would sit in all of these meetings next to Irvalyn or Tahina or one of our interpreters that was here in Independence interpreting for those meetings. And I am just listening to this evolving and shaping vision of what we are and what we are becoming. And it is compelling. And as I'm listening to all of these people, I mean, I never, when I was a little kid, like in Independence, apostles didn't come to Independence, right? They didn't, it seemed like it was only like every 5 years we got a visit from an apostle in our congregation because the expectation was they're out there, they're out in other places in the world. I mean, it was almost an untouchables thing. And so I never expected to be just sitting in a room listening to those conversations. And yet, what was happening was when they came and said, would you consider now being Mission Center president for Europe for three different mission centers? Even though that was daunting, I felt ready because I had heard and I wasn't a part of those conversations in terms of my input wasn't there necessarily, but I had been a part of the evolving vision of what we are and who we are becoming. And so I said yes. So I went back to Europe, where I then would spend the next 8 years as Mission Center President for the Eurasia field. And parts of that were different times. I was always for Western Europe and the Eurasia different mission centers. But there was a time when I was in the British Isles as well as I was living in the British Isles during that time. But parts of that time I was actually Mission Center President in the British Isles as well, in between a couple different people that had come into that role. But I served there for 8 years until, of course, we had this beautiful thing called the pandemic that disrupted all of our lives. So I was in Independence. I had moved back. My visa was ending, in the British Isles. And so I had moved back to Independence just for 3 months so I could get a visa to go and live in Belgium. I was expecting to go and move to Belgium. That was March 10th that I came home in 2020. And of course, not more than a week or two later, everything was closed. The embassies were closed. I was not going to get an appointment. And it took forever. That visa never happened. And in that transition, finally, at a certain point, because there was a time when it was just wild trying to get everybody online. In some ways, it was beautiful to be in Independence because I was able to coordinate. I wasn't, we weren't moving anywhere, so we all had to do everything online. But in other ways, I had to get up at 3 in the morning to do worship services at 11 online that were over in Europe because of the time differences. And it was a crazy, crazy year. Kind of transition, getting people online. And then in that second year, I was like, if I'm not going back to Europe, if we're not traveling, how can I be effective in this role? And Scott Murphy came and said, we actually would like you to consider doing something different. Now I'm going to blame this on you, Robin. Because, as you know, during the pandemic, you gave me a phone call and said, Joey, would you like to encourage the church during this pandemic? And I'm like, what does that mean? And you said, why don't you just take your phone and walk up to the temple? Because I know you live really close to the temple. Why don't you just walk up to the temple and make a video and just say a few words of hope and encouragement for the church? And of course, that one video then turned into 70 videos, 70 weeks. We thought the pandemic was going to be like maybe 3 months maximum. So I was like, oh, I could do a couple of videos about this. But as it persisted and endured, I was going up to this empty space because everything was closed. And I ended up going for 70 weeks to where. I had to do research. I had to be like reading these books and figuring out what the temple was really about so I could share something more deep and actually share some good content about the symbolism of the temple and what the temple meant and try to get this 3 to 5 minute little blurb about the temple that was different. I had done all the main things and then I had to get creative. I know I did one of those videos was on the water fountain and the library. And I'm sitting at the desk in the library and I'm working on a computer. And I had to get creative. I even talked about the door handles, how they go from big to small to give access to even small children can open the doors from the bottom, or people in a wheelchair would have access that you wouldn't typically have with the door handles being just in one place up a little higher. So these videos, I am sure, contributed to then Scott coming in and saying, well, would you consider now if we shifted you into hospitality to become the hospitality director, kind of run our tours here at the temple? And we also want you to, at the same time, to kind of work in formation ministry so you can continue to do, kind of the trainings that you do, and you'll be able to travel with that. So I know because I love to be part of the International Church, they probably offered that formation ministries part as a way to say, okay, we don't want to just keep you in the temple that you've been alone in for 70 weeks making videos. But it was a hard transition for me because I really loved working in Europe. And yet, if I wasn't going to be on the ground in Europe, it made sense that it was probably time to do something different. And so that's where I've been for the last couple of years, is working kind of in that dual role of working with Formation Ministries, where I connect with the Multinations Apostles team to help develop resources for them. And then also I kind of revamped and created a listen an online listening opportunity to walk through the temple with all of these different voices from different people from around the church and all these different accents, which walk you through the tour of the Community of Christ Temple.
What an amazing journey you have been on. Before we get into talking about the new exciting call to which you have given your sacred yes, I want to take a little side trip. It may seem odd, but often as full-time ministers, we can be so consumed by the doing of ministry and church life that we find ourselves sometimes neglecting the being and the continuing need of our own souls. So, Joy, how do you nurture your relationship with God?
That is such a great question. And we talk about the need for this all the time, especially in formation. And man, I wish it were that simple. I wish it was actually us tending the garden with God. But it seems that it's always God tending my garden, right? I am the Adam and Eve story. I think I find myself, when things get too much, you know, when the doing just becomes too much, I find myself hiding from God. That's where I slip into, I want to watch, just binge all my shows on Netflix and eat whatever I find. But those are, it's God who comes searching for me. Just like God goes into the garden and says, Adam, Eve, where are you? What's going on? I feel like God, especially in those times when my doing has become too much, that it's God who comes seeking me and says, hey, let's take a break here. Let's give some other consideration to what you're doing. Take a little time to figure out who you are and who you are becoming. You've heard that a lot on this podcast, but that's a really important concept for me, of taking the time to be who you are, but also who you're becoming. My sister once said, one of the things she loves about me is that I always seem to have one foot in the past and one foot in the future. So that space over which we are stepping, that present moment, is sometimes easy to neglect and hard to give attention to, but it's probably some of the most important things that we need to do, is to give some attention to that space that we are stepping over at this time, just to see where we are with things. Compare that to the past and allow the past to maybe indicate where we might be going, but not dictate where we might be going. And then to begin to see that future that we might step into. When it comes to, I mean, I think what you mean by that question are there spiritual practices that are kind of helpful for me? Prayer is, I think, the primordial practice that we can do. It's like, which for me, by the way, prayer is not necessarily, you know, a set of words that we recite to God, as much as I believe it's the concept of walking with God, you know, to spend time walking in God, with God, surrounded by God. So just to have that holy attention to our lives and what we're doing. If you look at my Facebook from time to time, I post these things every once in a while that are called 1 minute meditations. And that often is me busy in the doing, and yet at the same time, trying to be aware of Joey's relationship with God and where do I see God in this moment. And so it's more than just watching a duck float across the pond. Because that may be what the 1 minute meditation is. It may be something that for people out there watching, it's just kind of this serene moment. But for me, this is my nurturing moment with God. This is my moment to pay attention and realize God is up to things that really aren't on my agenda for today. And yet just giving that 1 minute to pay attention to that can really recenter me and put me in a place to be ready for what is coming next. Prayer, I want to go back to that because ever since I was a little kid, I kind of felt like prayers didn't count unless you said them out loud. And I say that, and I know that's ridiculous. Obviously, any prayer you say matters, especially as people who have this connection to faith and connection to a spirit that moves within us and around us. But yet, the more I think about that, how important that was for me as a little kid to literally kneel down by my bed and say, and I don't do that anymore, probably because I can't get up, but literally to kneel down and pronounce the words of our petition, of what we're asking for, of expressing what our feelings are inside, what our hopes and visions are, to see if those, you know, how often do we ask, let our vision align with your vision, God, and to kind of take that time to give words to that. Words are powerful. And so when we speak those words out loud, and in my prayer life and in my times of trying to connect with God, I am very careful of when I actually say that prayer out loud, because when I do, I know that it begins to put things in place. When I just say it out loud, God, make me a person of compassion, then I have to begin to look at the world with eyes full of compassion. God, help me help the poor. When I say that out loud, if I say it inside, I can kind of ignore things. I don't have to always help when I see there's a need. But when I say it out loud, it begins to already put in motion, which is really interesting if you connect that with God's own words that create the world and put the entire world in motion. In that story that we use to tell about kind of the creation and our purpose of being a part of this amazing universe that we are just little stardust in.
Well, I think one of the phrases you used is a great segue to this, the next part of our time together. It is God who comes searching for me. So, Joey, tell us about receiving your call to the office of apostle.
There's interesting times in life. When you ask the question or you wonder sometimes, is this it? Is there something else? Is there, what's next? And it's funny. This is actually a funny story, even though I'm a little emotional about this. But you know, life kind of, we got life back a little bit after this pandemic. So we've kind of come out of that time. Things became opened and, you know, we were given tours and things were going well. I was really grounded in my role, which I kind of never thought, you know, I should be the hospitality director of the temple. You know, I never thought I'd be the person at the front desk. And yet I had found a real sense of purpose in being kind of the face when people walked in, as well as all of our volunteers, that wonderful volunteers that are at that front desk, but to be able to take people around and share who Community of Christ is as I would lead different tours. Often, you know, we had a tour where people could walk themselves around, but if I had the time, I would always give that tour to people. In fact, because I live so close, times that I'm just driving by the temple and I would see people outside, I would come up and say, do you want to go inside and see? And they're like, can we? And it, you know, it's way past hours, but I'm like, you're lucked out because I happen to have a key. And I would take people in and share who Community of Christ is with them. And I was asked, well, an opportunity came about. We sold Kirtland. And that meant that some of the people that were working there would be coming to Independence and they needed jobs. And one of those wonderful people is Roger Rose, who is now the hospitality director at the temple. I'm going to have to take a moment. So Scott comes in and says, we want to move you full time into Formation Ministries. And we're going to ask Roger to work as the hospitality director. And I had a real moment of like, what does that mean for me? You know, as I just described, I felt like I had real purpose and meaning in my role being at the front desk, welcoming people as they were coming in and introducing them to not just the temple, but also Community of Christ, who we are and who we are becoming. And so, you know, it was crazy. I had to get all of my things packed, and I was getting ready to do 7 weeks of reunions. So different camps around the United States that I had overscheduled myself. I'm sure it was because of all the no's I said during the pandemic, that now I was trying to get all of those to be yeses. And so I had overbooked myself, and I get a call that says I need to have all the stuff out of my office because Roger's coming into this new role. And so I pack everything up and I put it in an office that you can see right now. You can see the boxes all over my office still. And so I get everything packed up. I come into this office, and while I was really excited because I was excited about it. Now part of that was, how can I now be available for more travel, more international connection, to now in my role in Formation Ministries to go out into the different fields and be able to be hopefully useful and help people in their resource development, but also in trainings that would happen around the church. So I was really excited about that position. But of course, I had no idea what was in store for me. So I spent like 2 weeks just really wondering what does this mean, and heading out to these different reunions around the United States. That at least distracted me a little bit. So my focus was just on getting ready and preparing for all of those reunions. And so about 2 weeks later, Stacy asks me if I can meet online, which she actually had tried. I think she wanted to meet me in person, but the timing didn't work out with some things that were going on. And so Stacy calls and we're online, and she presents this call, and she didn't dilly dally around with it. She got right to the point, and we had just some moment talking about some different things. I had been in French Polynesia for their national conference, where I was able to preside over their national conference. So we talked a little bit about how that went. And that's what I thought the conversation was going to be about, was about the national conference in French Polynesia and how that experience was for me, but also for all of the church in French Polynesia. And then she just says it, that, and the words that I remember are, you are called. So she didn't say, I'm calling you. And it was powerful just to hear those words. You are called. Which in many ways affirmed that first call that my pastor had given in my congregation. Because it was just as uncertain. And that my pastor, when I was called the elder, knew this may not be where you're going to serve. It may be elsewhere. There may be other things. And you know, you probably know this, but when you get a call to serve in the Council of 12, it doesn't come with an assignment. It is, you are called to serve as an apostle, as a witness of Christ, which is what we're all called to do. And so it was weird because it was more affirmation of all the yeses I had said in the past. And yet an invitation to an unknown and uncertain future. So I'm still struggling with what that might look like. And yet I'm very hopeful. Every time I've said yes, as this, even this podcast reminds me, as I've gone over my story, all the places where God has been in the midst of all the yeses, it's all the ifs. If you will do this, then I will. If you will say yes to this, then I can.
Thank you so much, Joey, for sharing so authentically and transparently with us.
Well,
So
it's you pull that out of people.
I know it's still early in this unfolding journey with this new role, but as it is already unfolding from the moment that you said yes, how is this new chapter in your ongoing adventure with God changed things for you?
I assume this is similar for many people, but it begins with a real introspection, looking inwards. It unfortunately is accompanied by lots of questions of, am I good enough? I think that's so unfortunate because maybe. And I think this is throughout many, many different faiths. Have we not been good enough in our witness to let people know that the whole thing is to know that you are beloved? Whether you say yes or no, whether you step into this or not, you are beloved. That's the powerful part of Jesus' own baptism for me. Jesus hadn't healed one person. At best, Jesus was a smart kid at 12 years old in a temple, playing a game or debating with all of the leaders as a smart little kid, a little smart aleck. That might have been me at one point. Wouldn't have been as smart or wise. But Jesus had done nothing. Nothing that we know of in Jesus' ministry other than being born, right? Being this vulnerable incarnation of Emmanuel, God with us. And before Jesus goes out and does anything, God's spirit comes down in that dove and a voice is heard that lets him know, you are beloved. You are good enough. And I think if we could really grasp that and believe that, there is so much more that we could do coming out of that being and the knowing that we are good enough, we are beloved. And now there is a work for you to do.
So this is in some ways a big question, but always a question for the moment that we're in. What are your hopes for Community of Christ into the future? And certainly you've spoken to that in many ways already today. How do you see God moving in the world today? And how does that connect with our movement, our peace movement in Community of Christ, and the heart of God's vision for all creation?
Oh, for once, I might actually have some clear answers for my hopes and for answering a question. My first hope for Community of Christ is that we go further with this concept of becoming a prophetic people. There are a few phrases that have really caught my attention and I have grabbed onto, but I'm also very curious because I don't think we've gone far enough with them. One of those is the worth of all persons. I think we often, we go to a certain point, right? That everybody's welcome. We even sing songs like that. All are welcome. And yet there is another phrase, oneness and equality in Christ. And as you begin to like really take a look and go deeper with those concepts, I think there's so much more that we can discover about the ways that God is speaking and living in and among us. I see us in the future, and my hope is that we continue to hear that prophetic voice through multiple voices and much more diversity than we even have come to. And in some ways, it feels like we might even be at a breaking point for some people of we've become too diverse because we've kind of been on a very fast journey compared to maybe some other faith movements of the ways that we have tried to really live into that principle of the worth of all persons and to lift up people for who they are and what they offer. But there's so much more that we could do and so many ways that that can be expressed that I think are still to be discovered. So I can't wait to really begin to see what we will gain and how we will hear God's voice through the diversity that we are encountering. People that are contacting Community of Christ that we never would have expected maybe would be knocking on our doors and just sharing together in this mutual continued revelation as God speaks to me and as God speaks to you and as God speaks to that diversity. And when we listen, if we listen, then we will hear and see the vision that God has for us and where we need to go in the future. The next place that I would go with this question is that we continue to figure out what it means to follow Jesus, the peaceful one. When I was in translations and I opened up this document that became it, you know, to have kind of this first look before the church received this information, but the five mission initiatives. At the time, when I read that first mission initiative, invite people to Christ, and I'm like, ugh. Because I think we were becoming in the world, we've become this, that there are so many versions of what it means to be Christian that I was almost uncomfortable with that word, invite people to Christ. You know, for me, I was reading that as, you know, make people Christians. I am much more comfortable with the phrase, invite people to follow Jesus, the peaceful one, or invite people into Christ's mission for the world. That resonates more with me because then there's, you know, we have to discover what that is. We have to come to agreement on what that looks like. And I can't just call myself a Christian, but I have to actually evaluate my actions and the way that I express that faith before I can say I'm a Christian. And it's easier for me to evaluate that when I look at, am I truly following Jesus, the peaceful one? So one of my hopes is that we will continue to grow and expand our understanding of what place we have among faith movements. So ecumenically, within other Christian denominations, what is our peace gene and what is our contribution to the efforts of peace throughout the world? but also interfaith. Some of my deepest and most fulfilling conversations have been people within other faiths to realize that we share this desire for peace. Shalom, salam, Freude, Frieden, Paz, Pe. All of these words that we see on our peace poles that we put outside of our church. So I think that that is a common point that we share ecumenically with other Christian denominations, but also interconfessionally with different faiths around the world and people who claim to not have any faith. We can come together and meet at a center point of a desire for peace and justice in the world. So I hope that we will continue to explore that and discover not only who we are, but how we are becoming peaceful humanity. My third and final part of answering this is that I believe that God is moving in this world, this world that seems to be just constantly giving us new challenges. And God is giving us opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to pay attention to what is happening. That's an environmental question, first of all, as we look at what is happening environmentally, the disasters that are occurring, it seems repetitively and with more force. And it helps us, I think, to begin to find our place in that. What is our response? And not necessarily that we're going to come up with the way to stop all of this, but how do we interact and how do we form relationship in the midst of this? How do we continue to protect the vulnerable of all of these situations that are happening? And I believe that youth and young adults are at the forefront. They understand and they see the impact of what is happening. And I believe they will lead us into the future. A little child will lead them. They are the child in the peace logo, that between the destruction maybe that we've done to the world and the most vulnerable in the world, I believe that we need to turn a lot of our attention to the formation and development of young people who will not only capture the vision that God has for us, but lead us into the heart of that vision.
Before we sign off, Joy, I want to ask you if there's anything else that you would like to share with us today that I haven't already asked you about.
No. I've certainly said enough. But I have loved our time together. You always give me a space, a safe space where I feel that I can share well.
Thank you. And thank you so much for being with us today, Joy, and sharing your life story and your life journey with God.
Thank you.
If you would like to hear more from Joey, check out Extra Shot 130-130 Hospitality with Refugees, Episode 462, Nonviolence Conversation, and Episode 397, Temple Tuesday, which includes a link to all the Temple Tuesday episodes Joey talked about today. And as always, a very special thanks to all of you, our listeners, for spending a portion of your day with us. This is your host, Robin Linkhart, and you are listening to Project Zion Podcast. Go out and make the world a better place. Take good care. Bye-bye.